The Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, Episode 9. 90% of Canadians live within 100 miles, that's 160 kilometers, of the U.S.-Canada border. I'll show you Paris in the morning. I'll show you London afternoon. If you feel your Dublin heart is burning, then when you don't. Hello, travel nerds, and welcome to the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, the show that will inspire you to travel and then show you how to do it on any budget. I'm Trav, the creative Extra Pack of Peanuts, and with me today is one half of the dynamic duo that not only runs a fabulous travel blog with amazing photography, but is the premier source of information on house-sitting and how to score sweet house-sitting gigs and live rent-free all over the world. Daylene Heck of HecticTravels.com. Daylene, thanks for coming on the show and welcome.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
And I believe hectic is the appropriate word for your last couple of weeks. What have you been up to lately and where are you headed next in about 3 or 4 hours?
Hectic is right. We have just finished, we're back in North America for only a few weeks. We just wrapped up a 3-month house sitting job in Turkey and then flew back to Toronto for TBACs and did some touring around Quebec, which we have never done. And now we're on a quick little house sit in Connecticut, and in a few hours we're heading to JFK and we're on our way to Poland.
And will this be the first time you guys go to Poland?
Yes, this will be a brand new country for us. We're very excited to go there.
Awesome, awesome. Well, we won't hold you too long here, but you've got a lot of stuff to tell. And on today's show, we're actually going to discuss two main topics that Daylene is an expert at. One is house sitting and how you and your husband, Pete, are able to live rent-free around the world. And the other is traveling as a couple, since you are the first couple to actually come on this show. Everyone else has been kind of a solo traveler, and I think your insight and wisdom into that will be invaluable.
But I'll do what I can.
Yeah, and I guess you're both not on the show, so you get to say what you want to say, and he can't really rebut that, so that's kind of nice.
That was the plan.
But before we get into all that, I'd love for you to share a little bit of your background, because your current tagline is no plans, no possessions, just travel, and that's awesome. But before you were these traveling nomads, you guys were pretty quote-unquote normal, right?
We were completely normal. We were a corporate climbing couple living in cozy Calgary, Alberta, and we both worked downtown related to oil and gas most of the time of our careers, and we were doing very well for ourselves, had the cozy house in the suburbs, the nice vehicles, even a couple of cats. We were living the life. And then it just in 2007, we went through a really difficult time, just some family tragedies kind of stacked up against one another, and we realized it really made us question our lives and what we wanted to do with them. And we realized that, I mean, we weren't completely unhappy, but we knew we could do much better. And so we made the decision to sell all of our belongings, find homes for our cats, and make our life on the road.
Yeah. And I remember reading a little bit as you first, I mean, you sold your house in 2008, correct?
Sorry, 2009.
2009.
May 2009.
Okay, so 2009, and then you did a kind of a feeler tour, right? You went to Central America or South America and did a couple months there, learning Spanish.
We did almost a full year in South America. Actually, we started in Bolivia. We did sit still for a couple months, learning Spanish, and then just worked our way around 7 countries. And then we had to come back to Canada because Pete's brother got married, and so when we got back, we weren't quite sure what we were going to do next, and we kind of thought we'd settle. Backpacking for a year is really exhausting, and
right.
We were tied around from that. And then once we got back, we realized that we had no intention of resuming the life that we had, and that we wanted to get back out on the road. And that's when we discovered house sitting.
Yeah, and I think that's for me one of the most inspiring parts about it is you did it. And then you came back and you kind of thought, okay, 1 year was enough. We got that out of our system, right? And you realize quickly that it's not something that kind of gets out of your system. But actually, for me, I know the more I travel, the more I actually want to do it. Do you feel the same way then?
This is normal for us now. This is absolutely normal. And neither of us can really imagine living our life any other way right now. We get nervous at the thought of sitting still for too long in one place. We are purely addicted, honestly, to just the thrill of learning about new cultures and seeing different parts of the world. That's the way we learn, is by seeing and experiencing. And we're just really on a quest to devour the whole world this way if we can.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I think you touched on the next question of really what is it that makes you want to continue to travel? And I guess, kind of like you said, just seeing new things and being excited to see the world, right?
Absolutely. It's just really indescribable. I can't believe we actually get to live our life this way. And to be able to, well, we're really bad at making decisions, but I was going to say, to be able to choose our own path and go in whichever direction we choose is just too good to give up.
And logistically then, you know, the tagline says no plans, but I'm sure there are a little bit of planning. How far out do you plan where you're going to be next, or is it like, how does that work logistically?
It really varies. I'd say when we started out 2013, we knew in January what we were doing up until June. And that's really quite unusual that we would know that far in advance. Right now we know what we're doing up until August 26th.
Okay.
But there's a lot of questions in between there. Like in Poland, we have our first 10 days booked, but after that, we have no idea where we're going, where we're staying. Our plans are completely wide open after the end of August right now.
Yeah, so pretty interesting. Yeah, it really is fly by the seat of your pants, I guess.
Yeah, and it's our own fault. We are really bad at making decisions. And there's times when we turn to our readers and ask them to decide for us where we should go. And I think we're going to end up doing more of that. I think it makes it fun for them as well as, like I said, we just can't decide ourselves.
Yeah, that's a pretty interesting theory or thing that you want to do. We had Colin Wright on the show. I don't know if you know Colin or not, from exilelifestyle.com.
Oh, yes. Yep.
Yeah, and he does it all the time, the whole 4 months, pick where I'm going, goes there. And I think once you start traveling more, it's almost harder to decide because you see that the world is so open. If you don't travel a lot, I think you see, oh, I want to go to Italy, I want to go to Spain, you know, kind of these main places, which are obviously awesome. But the more you travel, the more I've traveled, the globe, every point on the globe now seems interesting to me.
And it gets smaller. It doesn't seem like such a big feat to make these big leaps across the globe. It doesn't seem like a big deal. Like we went from, you know, we were only in North America here for 3 weeks and then we're back over the Atlantic. And for some people, that would be a big deal, or it would have been to us in our past lives. But now it just seems like it's nothing at all to just hop around the globe.
Yeah, I completely agree. The more you do it, the more comfortable you get with doing it. And, you know, people say to me, how do you travel so much? And I think, well, I don't travel near as much as, you know, all these other people that I'm following and reading and stuff like that. And I think it just becomes, like you said, your normal life becomes normal to you.
Yeah, this is completely normal for us now.
That's pretty neat. We've touched on a little bit already, but let's dive into the whole house sitting thing a little more, because I think this is going to be absolutely wonderful for listeners, and you guys are really the experts at it. You're the people who turned me on to house sitting and this idea that I could live rent free and bop around the globe like that. So, first off, how does it work?
Essentially, what it is, it's an exchange of resources. Essentially, so for example, right now we're here only for 9 days in Connecticut, and it was actually a reader that got in touch with us and asked if we were available. And so for us, it gives us a chance to explore a place we've never been to before. And for them, they get someone to look after their dogs in their house while they're gone. So there are people out there that will do it for a fee. We don't. We just believe in the reciprocal relationship that develops out of house sitting. We've got some really great friends from it now. And so many homeowners have said to us when we've left, you're never homeless. You always can come here, whether we're here or not. So we've made some really great friendships along the way as well.
Yeah. I think that house sitting speeds up kind of the friendship process, because they're trusting you with their home, their pets, and whatever else responsibilities come with it. And obviously you're trusting them that you're not going to walk into some situation that something's going to happen to you or it's dangerous or anything like that.
And there are horror stories on both sides of the fence, for sure, with house sitters that show up to a home that's a complete disaster and vice versa. But it is quite remarkable, the trust, when I think about that, that we really only met online, maybe Skyped once or twice, and then that's it. You're coming to live in their home for, you know, the longest house sit we've done is 6 months. So it's a big responsibility on both sides.
Yeah, and what are some of then the house sits that you have done? If you don't have to go through all of them, because I'm sure there's been a bunch by now, but just some of the ones that you've done over the last 3 or 4 years.
This one is our 13th. So we have done house sits in Canada, Manhattan, Honduras, Ireland, Spain, Turkey, oh gosh, Belgium, Germany. A lot.
Yeah. 13. Yes. And the longest one you've done has been 6 months. Where was that?
That was in Honduras. It was a couple, American couple that had built a house down there and then decided that they didn't like living there and wanted to return to the U.S. But so we lived there. There was no pets. And all our main responsibility was to make sure that the house was show ready for any showings by the real estate agent.
Okay.
That was our big responsibility. And we lived there for 6 months. And at the end, we calculated, because all we were responsible for was food and gas. And we spent $4,000 in 6 months.
Wow.
And that was it.
Wow. Yeah. When you take accommodations out of the equation, really, you know, you can live pretty frugally then.
Yeah, absolutely. And we don't tend to like to do really long house sits like that, but it is a nice break as well. Like when we did 2-3 months in Turkey, we had come off of a stream of a lot of rapid travel. And so it also provides a really good place to just sit, not only learn about the culture in a whole different way, but save money, but also just relax a bit and feel like we're at home again.
Right. Yeah. Because with a couple days like in Connecticut, you know, it's probably nice for you to see the area, but you're not really settling in, I guess.
No, not at all. And this worked out for us because while then we're close to JFK, which is a easy way to get out of the continent and cheap way. And it just, after coming off of a few weeks of rapid travel, like I said, we need a week to just settle down and write some blog posts and do all the stuff that we need to do that we can't keep up when we're traveling fast.
Right. And then do any stick out in your mind as being really absolutely phenomenal? A few that you think, man, that was just great in every way.
I can't believe our luck when we had 6 weeks in Manhattan. That was an unbelievable house sit because there's no way we could ever spend that time in New York City. We just wouldn't have been able to afford it otherwise.
Right.
That was pretty remarkable. And then Turkey as well. Actually, we've gone back. We did 3 months there last year, and we just got off of 3 months there as well. Turkey's one of our favorite countries in the world, so it was. We loved going back and seeing all our old friends, and it was just fantastic opportunity.
Yeah, that's neat. So is the Turkey one the only one you've done a second time, or have you taken on other same house sits again?
No, that's the only one we've done another time. We've been approached to come back, but for whatever reason, some of them just haven't worked out, whether it's timing or we're in the wrong hemisphere or whatever.
Yeah. Well, then what are some things that people should know before taking on house sitting? Because obviously it sounds wonderful and is most of the time, but are there a few things that you've learned that make the process go smoother or easier, or just some overall tips for people who haven't done it much or haven't done it at all?
I think the most important thing, it does sound really exciting to be able to get a long-term house-sitting job, to live very cheaply in, say, a very attractive location. But I think, and this happened to us on our second house-sit in Honduras, we kind of rushed into it so excited at the thought of, oh my God, we get to live in a Caribbean island for 6 months, that we forgot what was really going to make us happy. It was a small island we're on. It was on the island of Roatan, and we weren't allowed to leave the island. And
okay.
So that really, we got some serious itchy feet at the end of that. And we hadn't thought that through and talked with the homeowner about other options so that we could. We were just so excited at the prospect.
Right.
So I think that's just one example of, I think house sitters need to really think about what they want out of it and what's going to make them happy, because the homeowner wants you to enjoy your time as well. And if you go into it not having thought through and then you're stuck for 3 months and you're miserable, nobody's going to be happy about that situation.
Right. So kind of put everything out maybe on the table beforehand, or try to feel out exactly what the rules or kind of what's expected of you before saying
Absolutely.
Yes to something.
Absolutely. Never leave any question unanswered before you get there, no matter how insignificant it may seem, it might be a big deal when you get there. And always, always ask 100 questions.
Yeah, that's great advice, because I know every day when I get the emails from trusted house sitters, you know, I look through them. There's, you know, whatever, maybe 5 or 10 a day. And I think this would be awesome. This would be awesome. This would be awesome. You know, I just go down the list.
Yeah. Some of them do seem too good to be true, but you really got to think about if you'll be happy during that time.
Right, right. And there's the expectations, I guess, kind of like you already said, have been very, very different between each house sit, correct?
Yes, absolutely. There's some have pet care, some don't. We always make sure to ask if it's okay to have guests because, I mean, for example, in Manhattan, all of our friends from home are like, oh, free room in New York? Kind of, they got very excited about that. So there's many things to think about and questions to ask before you get involved in that.
And how do you guys now go about finding houses? I know you said the Connecticut one was from a reader, but what resources do you use to find houses?
We follow a couple quite religiously. Trusted House Sitters, as you mentioned, is the biggest one out there. They do have the most house sits available across the world and a lot in Europe, which is where we tend to look.
Okay.
And Mind My House as well is the second one that we follow and get the daily email alerts from. But we are starting to get, readers will email us. We probably get once a month, we get options like that come up as well. So,
yeah, and I know that Trusted House Sitters, I'm not sure if the other one does or not, but Trusted House Sitters, people can contact you directly. So maybe it's not listed on, you know, the regular searchable database, but they can contact you directly. Do you get most of your house sits from people contacting you directly?
No, actually, we've only gotten one that way, I do believe. The rest of we have applied. And when we are looking, like, for example, we do want to find one in the UK for the month of September. And so when we're looking, we have to jump on them very quickly after we get the email alerts. Because the thing is that more people are learning about house sitting. There are more house sitters out there and hot properties are going really, really fast. So it's something that we are following very closely right now to see if there are any that come up that meet our criteria.
Yeah, so guys, don't steal one from Daylene and Pete if it comes up.
Yes, please don't.
For someone who hasn't house sit before, and we touched on this a little bit of being, you know, diligent with checking it, but what's some of the best advice you can give for how they can get house sits if they haven't done it before? Because like you said, it's becoming more and more competitive. Obviously, as more people find out about it, more people want these house sits. So what can you do as a new house sitter to get house sits?
If you are a new house sitter still at home, not traveling full time like we are, consider just doing it in your neighborhood, talking to friends, talking to family, anyone within a network that may be going away for a week or two and need pet care or whatnot. Start locally, get a couple of good references, because the key is to build up a good network of references. So, or if you haven't done any house sitting and you have no opportunity in the near future, talk to your landlord. If you've owned a house and maintained a house, that of course that's going to help you. Talk to vets or anyone else who can attest to your ability to care for animals. And those kind of references will just focus on getting a really solid list of references to go with your application.
And do you have any advice then? Because if you haven't been on these sites before, you can fill out a house sitter profile with all your information and pictures. And I think some allow videos even. And like Daylene said, references. What about filling out the profile? Is there anything you've come across or found that has helped you, like that you've said or done in the profile that's made you stand out other than just the number of house sits you have now? I'm talking kind of, you know, new people.
Yeah, just think about anything else that may be helpful and included in your profile. Languages, other languages that you may speak, for example. The one house sit that the homeowner did approach us was the Honduras one, and it was because we do have a level of Spanish. And so that was in our profile, and he found that out. Enthusiasm, whether it's in your profile or in your application letter, just to be sure to talk with great enthusiasm about why you want to take on that job, why you would be a good house sitter. And also to reference the listing directly. Don't use a form letter that you just cut and paste when you are applying for house sits. Be sure to address it specifically. Use the name of the dog if it's in the profile. Talk about how you would be good house sitter for them and not just about why you want to go house sit in Honduras or whatever it is.
Yeah, kind of like doing a cover letter for a job, you know.
That's
obviously
exactly it.
People are going to be able to pick through your thing and see if you've sent this same thing to 15 different people, or if you've taken the time, like you said, it's not hard. Reference the post, one or two specific things. They're going to say, this person is talking to me, not to the masses.
Exactly. Be sincere, be enthusiastic, be brief. Don't want to duplicate everything that's in your profile and your letter and vice versa. And be to the point, but make sure that they know why you would be the best one for the job.
Yeah, and I think enthusiasm, like you said, is a big one. I haven't done near as many house sits as these guys, but I've got, you know, I get maybe a letter every month or so just from someone who's found my profile and the listing isn't posted and they say, would you like to come in and do this house sit? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think it's because I wrote my profile kind of how my personality is. I'm enthusiastic. It doesn't have to be super structured. I think if you let your personality shine through, that's what people want to see. They want to see the person behind it, not just, you know, a list of qualifications and what have you.
No, absolutely. That's exactly right.
And if you guys, if listeners are interested more in house sitting, which you should be, because it is an amazing opportunity, make sure to take a look at Deline's book, How to Become a House Sitter and See the World. Also, you can check out the blog at Hectic Travels, because you guys have done a wonderful job there discussing and breaking down house sitting as well. And all this will be linked in the show notes, so you can find it in the show notes. But you have amazing resources at your blog for free. And then you have the book, which is just kind of a convenient, comprehensive guide to everything about house sitting that you guys have learned.
It gives a lot of examples of writing profiles and whatnot, which are easy to use to create your own. And in the house sitting book as well, there's a discount for trustedhousesitters.com that will more than pay for the cost of the book itself.
Awesome. Yes. Awesome. Yeah. And I've seen your profile on Trusted House Sitters. It's very well done. And obviously you have a lot of references, but just the profile itself is very well done. I think that leads to a lot of opportunities for you. So taking advice from these guys is what you want to do. They're the experts here. But Deline, let's change gears a little bit and talk about something that I'm extremely interested in, being a married man myself, and that is how traveling as a couple works and how you guys are able to make it work for now going on 4 years. And the first question I've got for you is kind of a fun one, and we said that Pete's not here, so it's up to you. But what is the hardest part of traveling as a couple as opposed to traveling solo?
Oh, I can't really compare it so much because I haven't done a lot of solo travel, but we do have our difficult moments traveling as a couple, and it's a double-edged sword. We can't be apart, but sometimes we just can't be together.
Just like marriage in general, I guess.
Exactly. And it's easier to just grate on each other's nerves when you're together constantly. But one thing we've learned is to just acknowledge that and ask for time away if we need it. And I'll say, okay, let's take the afternoon apart. You go do something else. I'll go do something else, whatever. And it's not, at first it was tough to take. We would take it personally, like we had done something wrong, but now we know that it's just a necessary thing and we take it without judgment and without getting mad. And it's like, yeah, you're right. We just need to be apart for a few hours, right? And that can work wonders.
Very neat. And I know you're a huge proponent and you write a lot about it on your site of how you guys make each other better in general, but on as a traveling couple as well, and how it's hard to be apart, because I do believe you did a solo trip maybe it was about a year ago. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
We were house sitting in Turkey, and
right.
I went to the TBU conference in Umbria, and so I was only gone for 5 days, I believe, but that was the first time we had been apart in almost 2 years, like apart. I mean, we'd do a few hours apart here or there, but that was our first night apart in almost 2 years, which is really quite ridiculous / remarkable.
Both.
Yeah. And it was difficult because, and I didn't realize it, but we take on certain roles with each other, and it's to the point where we probably should spend some time apart so that we can learn to do these things again ourselves. I'll give you an example. I was on the plane to Umbria, and I got up to leave and a lady pulled on my jacket and pointed to my seat, and I had left my Kindle sitting there. Right. And with Pete, I would never worry about that because he's the one that keeps us all organized. And in his bag, everything has a slot for where it should go. And I'm a total scatterbrain. And I just, but I don't have to worry about it because he does. So there's things that I just totally let lax now because he takes care of that, right, and vice versa.
That's very, very interesting. Yeah, I that's good that you're opposites in that way. I think especially with traveling, someone has to be organized or else it falls apart pretty quickly.
Yes.
But obviously then it's nice to have someone who isn't, because I guess you're more of the person who says, let's do this, let's do that, and kind of, I don't know if it's true, but it seems like pulls him along and says, like, don't worry as much, I guess.
Yeah, no, that definitely does happen. If it, especially at the start of our travels, if it were up to Pete, we would be in the very first town we ever landed in, because he loves everything and he loves everywhere, which is really great. But there's times when I'm like, okay, let's go, let's keep going, let's keep going. And he's not that way anymore. But in the beginning, it was definitely me that was pulling him along to the new adventure. He wanted to, he loves everything, which is good.
Right, of course. So why do you think it is then that so many people think that once you become a couple or once you get married, the travel, or at least travel as they knew it as like a solo travel, is kind of over? Do you get that from a lot of people or no?
It just takes on a totally different perspective, I think. And I admire the couples that do spend some time apart as well. We've talked about doing solo travel just as a way to, I mean, we are too reliant on each other for certain things and we need to get some of that back. And so we have talked about going different ways for just a couple of weeks at a time, just, and it gives a totally different experience. But we can, we talk about it, but we can never just decide to do it because neither of us ever really wants to do it. So it's, I mean, that's a good thing, but it's a totally different way of traveling.
Yeah. My wife and I have done most of our traveling together as well. And I always kind of, when I'm out and about and I see these backpackers doing solo trips and stuff, I get that urge, like, well, I know it would shape me more if I did on my own, just because it would have to.
Yes, absolutely.
I'd get out of my comfort zone. I talked to a lot of people anyway, but I talked to even more people because I wouldn't have someone there to always be by my side and all. But like you guys, I think I know it would be good for me, but whether I'm going to do it or whether we're going to do it, we kind of just then think, well, this is good too. So
yeah, exactly. It is really nice to have someone to share it with. Exactly. But there are times, even when I'm on my own, if it's just for a few hours in a new place, where suddenly I'm more approachable as well.
Yeah.
When you're traveling as a couple, locals or whatnot seem a little less willing to come up and talk to you because there's two of you there. But when you're on your own, I think they're more interested in what you're doing there on your own. And so they do approach. So I do enjoy those moments too when I am out alone. And it is, even in those little hours, it can be a totally different experience. But maybe we'll get around to doing it one day, but I don't know.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. When we moved to Japan, the first week and a half I was there on my own, and my memories from that week and a half are so vivid. And some of it was because everything was new, but everything I did on my own, so it was so vivid because it was like my memory, and it's in a different compartment in my brain, I guess. Colin, who we talked about a little earlier, mentioned being the idiot abroad, and he kind of used that term of, you know, when you're the idiot abroad, it's great because people come and talk to you because they know you don't know what you're doing, which which is perfect. But I guess, yeah, when you have two people, it might look like, hey, these guys got it together. You know, they're not just wandering around aimlessly.
It's like one's a shield to the other. Suddenly you're just not as approachable anymore, which is a shame in a way, but understandable.
Yeah, for sure. Logistically, do you guys normally want the same type of things, or is one of you more prone to, you know, being in a different region or anything like that? Do you usually agree on where you want to go, or is it you pick one, I pick one type thing?
No, honestly, we are so awful at decisions. And
first one to decide wins?
That is pretty much it. Like, even with us going to Poland later today, it was literally, well, it's the cheapest flight out of JFK. We knew we wanted to get back to Europe, but we just weren't quite sure where we wanted to go. And it came up that way. And so then that's where we decided to go. So it's sometimes it's opportunity that pulls us in different directions. And that's great when that happens, because then it makes our job really easy on the decision-making part. But otherwise, it's the equivalent of a dart on a map.
Hey, for the website, do you take on specific roles then?
Oh, definitely. Pete's the photographer. Well, 90% of the photos are probably Pete, and I do about 90% of the writing. We both shoot video. I've gotten into the video editing part of it. It comes out pretty split evenly, but I handle Twitter, Facebook. He handles StumbleUpon, Pinterest. We both do Instagram. It does split out pretty evenly that way, I guess.
Ah, okay. Yeah. And now, did either of you have any training prior to starting your website? Did you have training, you know, as writing, or did he have training as photography, or have you just learned as you go?
Yeah, we've just learning as we go. Pete's an accountant.
Okay.
In his previous life, and I worked as a, I hate explaining what I used to do, a purchasing manager, essentially.
Okay.
And so totally unrelated. And yeah, we just picked it all up and started learning as we go.
Yeah, I think that's neat. And most of the people we've interviewed here, we've interviewed Gary Arndt, and same thing. He's a very good photographer now and learned everything as he went. And your guys' writing and photography is phenomenal and learning as you go. I think there's something to be said for just picking it up, doing it, and getting better, right? I mean,
yeah, I think so. And I mean, you get the debate all the time between writers and bloggers can't write and all this other kind of stuff. And to me, I think all that really matters is that there's heart in it.
Right.
I'm going to do comma splices here and there and misspell words. There's no question about that. But I think it's just what makes a blog attractive to me anyways, is that there's heart in it. And that's what we've tried to do all along. And that's what ours is, just about our story, and that's what we focused on.
Yeah, I know the thing. I don't remember how I stumbled upon your site the first time, but the thing that drew me in, two things. One, when I first started reading, I thought, okay, she's a very good writer, but it's very personal feeling. You're writing a letter, and it seems like you're writing a letter to me. You know, you're writing it to all the readers, but it's very, very personal, and I loved that because I think that is what a lot of travel writing should be. I think, you know, your personal experiences, we get to know you as a person. And the other was the fact that, you know, I wrote you an email asking you, I don't even remember, some question, and I got like a book back, which I do for all my readers. I probably write way more back in an email than they need to know, but I really, really appreciated that. So I think that makes your site unique.
Oh, wow. Thank you very much. It's those are the sites I like to read as well, right? That are the personal story of what a person is encountering around the world. And it's also kind of therapeutic at times too, right?
Yeah, I completely agree.
So I get a lot out of it as well.
Yeah. And I know when you guys first started out, you were living off your savings that you had made in your, you know, your real life jobs. And of course, house sitting saves you thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars a year. But what are some other tips and tricks that you guys have picked up to save money when you're traveling? What have you learned to do to, you know, still have all these experiences, but not be breaking the bank?
Yeah, we're awful at budgeting, awful at planning and budgeting. Really, I don't know how we make our way around, to be honest, but house sitting does afford us many other opportunities. So when we are in house sitting mode, we save a lot of money on food. I mean, because we cook a lot as well. Any chance we can get to cook for ourselves when we're house sitting, or even in a hostel with a kitchen, we take it because it is a great way to save money. And then that allows us, when we're not house sitting, to have a little splurge here and there. We're going to Greenland in August, for example.
Okay.
And part of that trip is sponsored, but one part of it we wanted to do ourselves. And we are spending $600 for a 10-minute helicopter ride.
Oh, wow.
Totally ridiculous, right?
Right.
But we can, because we are able to do that, saving money doing other things. So that's the one great thing about house sitting, is when we get in that mode and when we're there, we're really scrounging and cooking for ourselves and doing well to keep our costs down. But then that allows us to do other things that we want to do when we're traveling.
Yeah, I think that's the side that a lot of people don't see. They see a website or a blog and, oh my gosh, these people go all over the world. They must be rich. And
yeah,
I think people who are saying that probably make more than most of the bloggers and website, you know, most of the people out there.
No, absolutely. I was going to say, I mean, we are still have to dip into our savings every once in a while for these bigger opportunities and stuff like that. We aren't totally self-reliant yet, but to me, that's just worth it. And we're going to get to that point where we are self-reliant. This is the year.
There you go. And I think people don't see the time and effort put in to save money. And then also just the fact that, you know, you're putting your priorities on travel, obviously. I mean, you've been doing it for 4 years, but you found a way to travel cheap with house sitting, and you're making your priorities travel so that you're not spending money on all this like superfluous stuff, but you're spending it on travel experiences like the helicopter ride. It might be ridiculous, but it is an experience, not a possession.
No, absolutely. There's no equivalent to that experience. Right. I can't go and buy 10 nice purses that make me feel as happy as that 10-minute helicopter ride would be. I'm sure of it. So there's no equivalent.
And I know you guys have crammed a lot into 4 years of travel, but what has been some of your favorite experiences?
Oh, wow.
Or anything you'd recommend to others, and obviously house-sitting we would both recommend others, but any specific places, experiences, things you've done that you'd recommend that were just blew you away?
The country of Turkey is always the top, is always the first thing to come out of my mouth when anyone asks about favorite experiences and countries. And it really is a really remarkable country. And that, it feels like a second home to us. We'd go back there anytime in a second. In South America, Argentina was a really remarkable country as well. It's just, it offers everything from top to bottom, jungles to glaciers and everything else. We really loved our time there, as well as in Bolivia. In Europe, we really enjoy riding the rails. Like, it's one thing that we don't have as much of in North America, right. And we do love getting on the train and seeing all the countries from a different point of view. We've seen a lot of countries in Europe, but we still have lots to go, so you've got to get moving on that.
Well, you're making your way through. You're going to Poland now.
Yeah, that's true.
And when you were in Turkey, I think it's pretty neat, you were in a very rural area, correct?
Yes, very, very remote.
So
little English spoken. Our best friend was the only man in town that could speak fluent English, obviously.
Yeah, and that's pretty neat because then, you know, that's the only place you've gone back to house sit, which I think says a lot about house sitting itself and just kind of being able to ingrain yourself in that culture. You know, you could go to Istanbul and it's great, but you're not going to get the same experience than if you're out in the countryside, you know, being part of like local things.
I mean, it's a thing, it's slow travel. And what it allows us to do is really dig into the culture, understand their daily lives, what they value as a society, et cetera. And I don't believe that there's any other real way to learn a country than to just sit in it and get to know its people and see how it flows. And it's what we try to do as often as we can, obviously that we can't all the time, but it is our favorite way to travel for sure.
And what are some places then that you haven't been to that you really, really want to get to that you said you're keeping your eye on a house sit in England, but are there places that you think if this ever came up as a house sit and it worked out for us, like we'd go there in a heartbeat?
Well, it's tough because house sitting hasn't hit a lot of countries yet. It's getting bigger in Europe. It's really big in Australia, New Zealand. So places where I may want to go, there isn't that many opportunities to hit yet. Like, we haven't been to Asia at all yet.
Okay.
And that may not be a place that we can house it. There are a few that do come up, but they're not as often as, say, in Europe. So there's lots of places around the globe we haven't been to yet. I want to do an African safari. I want to go eat pad thai 24/7.
Awesome.
we're thinking about it, and so there are places that we need to get. New Zealand is one place that's really high on our list as well, and it's a hotbed for house sitting, so we will make our way over there eventually.
Do you think there's any reason, I've wondered this myself, you know, it's very big in Europe, and like you said, Australia, New Zealand, you see them come up all the time, especially New Zealand's a very small country, 3 million people, you know, total population. Why is it that you think that there's so many house sits in those areas and really not as many in North America, or especially the U.S.? I've seen a lot come up for Canada recently, a lot in British Columbia and all. Is there any reason to that, you think?
You know, I don't know who ever thought of that first over in like the Australia, New Zealand area. But when we talk to people in Canada and the U.S., they honestly just have never heard of it.
Right.
They had never had that concept. So the more people we've had some of our friends that live in Calgary now put up their house on Trusted House Sitters, for example, to try to find house sitters. And it was honestly just because it had never occurred to them before. So why North America is so much slower, or even parts of Europe? I know that in some countries it's, I have a very dear friend living in Germany, and she's from Canada. Her husband's German, and he is just totally abhorrent at the idea that nobody's going to come and live in our house. She says, you know, that's a very German thing to say, and she'd be surprised if it ever really catches on there. So it may be something to do with just the perception of it, or it's starting to pick up around the world, and I think we'll just see it grow, though.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. When I talk about house sitting, not many people in America really, I mean, they get the concept when I explain it, but they don't, it's far into their brain. They wouldn't think to do it. And maybe one of the reasons is we just take shorter vacations. You know, if you take a 1 week vacation, you know, you might not really need a house sitter because you could afford to put your dog in a kennel or whatever. And, you know, Aussies and Kiwis and Europeans, they're on vacation half the year. So
that's true.
maybe we're onto something there. But
that is true. Even my mom, though, like she came to visit us in Turkey. So she knows, obviously, that we house it all the time. And she's always happy about these opportunities. But when it comes to her and her place, and she has two cats, and what am I going to do with my cats? I said, Mom, get a house sitter. And she won't do it. So it's something in the psyche that just needs to switch over, I think, to see it as a viable opportunity.
Yeah. And I think as it grows and more opportunities come available in our country and you know, stuff like that, I think people will, you know, maybe you have a friend who then it's worked for, and then, you know, they can personally vouch for it or something like that. So I do think it'll grow, like you said. But it is strange. Yeah. I'm always getting stuff for Australia and New Zealand, but very rarely something, you know, in North America, especially in the United States. But
yes, absolutely.
Well, Dalene, I'll let you go. I know you got to catch a flight soon, but I really appreciated your personal emails and the personal touch you've put into your website over the years. It's been a tremendous resource to me, and I know there's going to be a ton of people chomping at the bit now to get started house sitting and learn more about that. So before I let you go, if you just want to tell people where they can find you online again, how they can connect with you and Pete.
Sure thing. Our website is hectictravels.com, and that's Hectic with a K.
Right.
Because our last name is Heck. Don't forget that. We're very active on Facebook, on Twitter, Instagram as well. Also our YouTube channel. We've been gearing up a lot more on video. And so, you know, you can pretty much stalk us wherever you like. And we love hearing from our readers. As Travis can attest to, I tend to write books back. any questions at all about house sitting or anything else, just feel free to fire away.
And are all those Facebook and Instagram, is it all under Hectic Travel with a K?
It is. Okay. It is. We are very original that way.
There you go. It's a cool name. It works perfect with your last name. So, listeners, if you've been blown away by Dalene today and you're picturing yourself in an apartment in downtown Barcelona or house sitting in a vineyard off Lake Geneva, make sure to check out their site and their book, because it really, really is possible. Dalene and Pete are living proof of that. You can find all the house sits they've done and the wonderful pictures of the places they've been on their site. So go connect with Dalene. She writes, like we said, amazing email responses and really is one of the most helpful people I've ever found on the internet. If you have questions for Dalene that we haven't answered here in the podcast, you can leave a comment over on the post at extrapackofpeanuts.com. The show notes will be there as well, so you can find all the links there. And I'll make sure Dalene gets those questions and comments. Dalene, once again, thanks so much for coming on the show. Enjoy the pierogies in Poland.
Travis, you are far too kind. Thank you so much for all the kind words you said. And I will have a pierogi in your honor.
There you go. It's my It's my pleasure. If you like the podcast and you want to see it grow even larger and put a big smile on my face, make sure to give it a rating over on iTunes. We truly appreciate it. And remember, if you want to make your travel dreams a reality, you can visit extrapackofpeanuts.com, the web's number one place for frequent flyer knowledge and cheap travel tricks. Thanks again, everyone, for joining us. Thank you, Dalene. And until next time, happy free travels. Yeah, well, you don't have to. Don't have to worry.